important at this point, it seems to me, Loris, that we would be inviting Ames to join us in fleshing out this concept of where we go from here.
Correct.
Building the RFP, I mean, there will be multiple steps that go. I think this letter, as you drafted it, accomplishes that. I think we could amend it a little to be a little more clear on that fact if we wanted to. Either way, it's fine with me. Marty, thoughts?
No, I think this is a long, dormant thing that our growth, both in our communities and the university itself, is prompting and forcing us, and I think we'd be remiss if we weren't looking at it.
Yeah, so two choices. One, we could just approve this as presented, and I'll just, Loris, I'll have you email it to me, and I'll print it off on letterhead and sign it and send it over. Or we could approve this concept and let me do some editing work and maybe add a couple things that I think would be helpful to add in terms of a few of those initial steps, because I think it would only be the very initial steps that we've been talking about at this point. You guys' choice.
I'm not married to the language in this.
So you're going to give him literary. You're going to give him your red pen.
That's right.
You're going to give him your editorial red pen.
I'm going to give him the editorial red pen, and then just
Cool. Is that a motion?
That's a motion.
I would second that.
Further discussion.
None.
All right. So I've got that we are approving in concept the letter going over to the city of Ames, offering them the opportunity to join with us in starting this process. I'm going to take the letter as it's written and maybe tweak it to make it my own, going over there by saying exactly what we talked about, and we'll go from there.
Okay.
Good?
Correct.
Olson.
Aye.
Chee.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye.
And I would like to just make sure that if I go just to answer questions, sure. That everybody's okay with that.
Absolutely. Then we're pulling the next item, which was supposed to be discussion and consideration of Resolution 1807, terminating Story County, Iowa deferred compensation plan for public employees. We're deferring our existing plan and moving to the new plan. Alyssa's still gathering information. It'll bring this back to us when you have all that information gathered, right? So that's done. Next is discussion and consideration of the Kegley Branch Watershed Management Authority 2080, Ann Harper.
It's like you and I are going back and forth between presentations.
I need to get the right one.
Well, good morning.
Again?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Just barely.
Yeah,
that's why I haven't looked back so much of the time. Quite a few iterations of discussions between Ethan Anderson of the County Attorney's Office, and Jessica, thank him again for me, and Vicki Fielmeyer with the City Attorney's Office. We've reached a draft 28E agreement for the Kegley Branch Watershed. I just, the members of the board as well as those in attendance, a watershed management authority was set up by the Code of Iowa with amendments to Chapter 466 in 2010. This was following flooding in 2008 and 2010, and major flooding, especially in 2008. It's through the 28E chapter of the Code of Iowa. It's an agreement that's reached amongst two or more cities, counties, and/or soil and water conservation districts within a specifically sized HUC watershed, HUC 8, in fact. HUC is Hydrological Unit Code. Maybe you were going to ask that, so I clarified that. Kegley Branch Watershed Management Authority does have 12 potential members, the counties of Story, Boone, Hamilton, and Hardin, and their respective soil and water conservation districts, and then the communities of Ames, Story City, Roland, and Randall. Initially, I brought this to the board. Earlier this year, we thought Gilbert, based on an earlier map we saw, the watershed was included, but it is not, based on the latest watershed boundaries. That's not to say that they won't want to be involved, but they cannot legally sign the 28E agreement. At this point, we have a draft agreement before the board for today's action. Actually, on tonight's Ames City Council meeting, their consent agenda is the same agreement. So if both the City of Ames and Story County act on that as of whenever the city council meeting is done, we'll have a first draft watershed management authority. This is the blue large blob, is the boundaries of the watershed, and you can see it does extend up in Hamilton and Hardin considerably. Some in Boone County, it is north, you know, Story City and Roland are fully encompassed. The next steps today, action considering and approving the 20E agreement. And again, as I said tonight, the Ames City Council will consider it. I will forward it on, if it's approved, to other jurisdictions for consideration. And if they want me to come out and explain, I'll be glad to go and meet the city councils, so a lot of conservation districts, other counties. I don't anticipate full sign-on, just given the history we've had. That would be wonderful. And the history we had with Squaw Creek Watershed Management Authority, once Ames and Story County drafted it and approved it, those entities didn't propose changes, but I want to make sure that that's still the likelihood that there may be some additional negotiation on 20E agreements, and if that were to happen, I'd bring it back to the board. After the end of September, I'll take whatever signed 20E agreements or signed agreements we have, and actually compile them and record them in the Secretary of State's office to officially document the Watershed Management Authority, and then we would have the first official organizational meeting in October, November. With all this going on too, this coming Thursday night, there is a Kegley Branch Watershed Planning meeting, because your Prairie River bio is currently underway to determine the watershed management plan for that specific watershed. So I'll be able to share that, this agreement, with those parties Thursday night as well. A lot at you. Were there any questions?
Yeah, I just note that this is a very similar process to what we followed with the creation of Squaw Watershed Authority. Actually, many of the same players involved. I think Leanne is right to note that we will not get 100% sign on. Probably at least two of the counties, at least based on their history, will not join us immediately. But I think it is important to note that if we adopt this and the city of Ames adopts it tonight, it's formed. Because that's all it takes is two to form. Questions for Leanne?
Nothing. I think she laid it out clearly. Ames, I believe, looks at it similarly. And I'm not surprised when you start talking to supervisors in other counties that they're not so inclined to join us in something like this. So, nonetheless, it's something I think has been brought to us. It's a good idea, and I would make a motion, if nobody else has anything to say, for the consideration of the Kegley Branch Watershed Management Authority 20E agreement as presented.
I would second it.
Yeah, motion second. I just underscore, Story County continues to participate with other entities to try to be a leader in doing not only watershed assessments, but now in creating watershed authorities. We will end up being the only county in the state of Iowa later this fall who will have done assessments on 100% of our watersheds. And then it's going to be a question of what we do with it. This is, in my mind, the right steps to take to see what we're going to do. Leanne, thank you. Anything further before we vote?
Nope.
Cheney?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. 28E, forming the Kegley Watershed.
Thank you, Leanne.
Thanks, Leanne. Next item is consideration of Resolution 1803, authorization of a stop sign at 240th and South 500. Here I'm going.
This is one of those gravel road intersections I referred to earlier. Considering adding a stop sign. These types of requests are fairly common. The vast majority of the time on the rural intersections, we don't end up adding stop signs because it doesn't end up being the safest option. This was requested by a resident, and I told her that, but after looking at it, any request I take very seriously. So it's not that I'm not taking it seriously, but we want to end up with the best safety scenario. The intersection in question is right here. This is Highway 30, Ames right here. This is Boone County line. So we've got 60 vehicles a day east-west and 70 vehicles a day north-south. The main reason why I'm requesting two-way stop here is these trees have really grown the past few years. This resident has planted these trees throughout the entire property, so it really blocks that intersection. This is looking west into Boone County at the intersection.
Yeah, so that's where the development that Ames just turned down with the Trinitas development was going to go in, right?
And that was one of my concerns about more. People that aren't used to driving on rural roads are starting to go out in this area more. And this is looking south. Again, these trees completely block. You can't see traffic coming from that direction at all, and that's almost year-round. We realize we get crops that come up through intersections in rural areas, but they aren't year-round situations, and most farmers know to slow down at the intersection when the crops are high. So I have talked to Boone County about this, and they have agreed, and they're going to pass a similar resolution. So I'm requesting that we stop the east-west traffic. So one the stop sign over here in Boone County's, and then we'll add one here to stop it.
So coming off of Lincoln Way and going south, you won't have a stop sign?
Correct.
Okay. Questions, board?
None.
Just is what it is.
Yeah.
So if there are no questions, I would take a motion.
I would move. Okay. Nope, you got it.
I would move that we adopt Resolution 1803 to place stop signs at this corner.
Second.
Motion and second. Further discussion. Olson.
Aye.
Cheney.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. 1803 passes. Next is 1804, authorizing the placement of a stop sign, West 190th and Grant Avenue.
This is one we've talked about a few times in the past already, and it currently does have a gravel leg to the north right here, but this is the four-way intersection that's currently got stop signs for north-south. I'm proposing we add stop signs for east-west traffic, which is West 190th, we call Moose Road. We were paving this road this year and adding the bike lane. This is the current traffic counts out there. This is the intersection south. We have 1,100 on West 190th to 1,320, 200 and 270.
But growing.
I expect those numbers to change drastically. A lot of this GW Carver traffic and 69 traffic are going to come to go to the school this direction. So that will change drastically as soon as we pave that road this summer.
Yeah, I think if you happen to be somebody who lives all the way at the northern end of where George Washington Carver is paved, you're going to see a lot less traffic coming north and turning and going into Gilbert. As far as stop sign goes here, with all apologies to the drag racers who like to use 190th and go back and forth right there, especially the fact that we're putting in a crosswalk for the bike path means to me that we need to not only slow down traffic but stop it at this intersection. So to me, there's going to be some people who are going to be unhappy about this. They like to move through this area really, really quickly. But I think it's a necessary step.
And it does not meet the warrants for a four-way stop right now, but I think it's going to get there fairly quickly. And the main reason right now is for that the bike traffic comes on east side of this is north on my right, so they come down and around and then cross here. And then they'll cross West 190th, which is where we need the stop sign to protect. Be a lot more school-age
cross-ramp
traffic coming through there. And we do propose, we've already purchased two solar-powered flashers to put on these for a few months to warn the traffic.
Just east-west force.
Yes, east-west only. Yep. Have talked to the City of Ames. They're responsible for the one on the south side of the road that is under their jurisdiction. They seem open to it at this point, and I've offered our second flasher for temporary use if they want to use it.
What do the flashers, the solar flasher cost?
Oh, they're not real cheap, probably $1,500 a piece.
Wow.
The reason we purchased it was for Dayton northbound. We talked about that a few months back. We're going to put it over there eventually because that northbound Dayton stop sign gets run so much.
I have a question related to the bike path and this kind of the stop signs, but to my knowledge, we do not have a county ordinance that requires people to ride on a bike path when one's available. Am I correct in that?
Correct.
Okay. I just have concerns, you know, on 190th as development continues to grow out there. I like the stop signs because that will help, you know, control traffic. But I just do have a concern if people continue to ride on the road, especially after we put in
the new pavement.
Is that concern?
Okay.
Yeah. Well, and the really bad road in this area for bicycle traffic and safety concerns is actually George Washington Carver. A lot of bicycles like to ride George Washington Carver. It's really too narrow to accommodate that kind of traffic. We've got some bad sight lines. I'm hoping that this is going to help to reduce some of that. But, Laura, I think it's a valid concern. I'm not sure I go all the way to us needing an ordinance, but
I wasn't suggesting one. I just wondered if we had one. No, I think that that's an ordinance that would be almost impossible, would be impossible to enforce, but I just, I want to ask.
Question on making it a four-way stop at 190th, and I call it 530th, even though it's got seven different names right there.
No, I believe these stop signs were part of the discussion last summer when we were talking about going forward on pavement, so this is a year later, and here we are. So I would make a motion on Resolution 1804 authorizing placement of a stop sign at West 190th and Grand Avenue.
I would second.
Motion and second. Further discussion. Sheehan.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. And we will get some phone calls on this one. Thank you, Darren. Let's see. We're to consideration of Resolution 1805 bridge embargo.
This is something we do every 2 years when we get our bridge inspection report back. We did recently receive that report, and this is the results. And the reason for the resolution is similar to stop signs. It's to make it enforceable. Say a heavy truck went over a bridge and collapsed it. That was way over the posted limits. This would give us a bit of a way to make them pay for it. Not all of them go that way in the course, but this would give us a little bit more ground to stand on. Just a couple statistics about the changes that took place in the past 2 years. The good news is we've replaced 13 bridges. Now, the bad news is we gained one to the list from the previous. So there's a couple reasons for that. One, FY15 report, there was 120 on the list. This report has 121 total. The majority of those are just one-lane postings.
Right.
The majority of the one-lane postings are for load reasons. Some of them are for width reasons, but the majority are for loading. Typical bridge, you could have two trucks side-by-side on that bridge. Some bridges can't handle that, so that's why you post it one lane to say only one truck can be on the bridge at a time. Mm-hmm. Rarely two heavy trucks like that meet on these bridges, but that's why they're posted one lane, is for loading purposes. We'd rather post it one lane than put a load limit on it. So that's a little bit what happened there. We have 64 posted bridges in the FY15 report. This one has 66, so it went up two. Now, the reasons for that were two. We add some over time.
Sure.
Just deterioration. We had a couple that we addressed right away that would have been on the list. We did some major piling repairs in-house up by Zeering. And did some trigger repairs over on the 590th that took them off the list, so it would have been even higher. The other reason I want to point out is there's some new rules that kind of took effect on postings. They're called special haul vehicles, and what those are, this is your typical weight limit sign, the three trucks. This first truck is the one that got changed a bit, and the special haul vehicle is more of this truck on the bottom that has multiple axles. They can drop these three axles down and have five really closely spaced. And for bridges, that's important because it puts a lot more weight in one spot on a bridge.
Right.
That all falls under this first posting. We didn't used to take that type of truck into account, but we have to now. So all of our bridges were rated for that, and it added 12 new bridges needed postings. Most of them were the one-lane postings, so they aren't a real big deal, but we had a few that added actual load limits, too. But I wanted to point that out. And I also point out, we have a metric in our strategic plan to reduce posted bridges by, but the goal is 5% every year. that was a difficult method to come up with for this reason. It's kind of a moving target. Stuff like this happens regularly. We're posting rules.
Well, this year we changed a major change in the rules.
So we made a lot of ground with those 13 bridges, but it's not reflected in this. That's why I wanted
to. Yeah, but the reality is if we keep doing 12 to 15 or 16 bridges every 2 years, we're going to make progress, even with the rule changes, even if we don't show it in this report.
And the water thing I want to point out on this was there's one bridge that shows closed. This, I discussed this a while back, and I know, Rick, you mentioned you wanted us to take action on that real quickly. The reason we didn't, that's the bridge right here. This is down by Cambridge. This is the Skunk River Bridge. It's a driveway bridge. We come to find out the entire bridge is not in public right-of-way. A portion of it's on private right-of-way. So we'll take our action now to close our portion, and I'll talk to landowner about. We think we have more right of way there, but we cannot find documentation for it. So we've been searching. When we get more time, we'll look further. But if we can prove it's all on public right of way, we can close it and actually remove the bridge. But I don't want to remove it until I talk to the property owners. I don't.
But we can go ahead and close that.
We'll close our portion, put up signs, and talk with them. But I wanted to point that out. That is on this report. And they'll stay as closed bridges on this report until we physically remove the bridge, and then they'll completely come off this report.
Okay.
That's it for this, and we do have the map updated yet, but as soon as we get the map updated, we put that on our website that shows all of our postings. So that'll be coming out soon.
Questions for Darren on Resolution 1805?
None.
I take a motion.
I would move that we approve bridge embargoes for in Resolution 1805 as presented.
Second.
Motion and second. Further discussion. Aaron, good work. Olson.
Aye.
Cheney.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. 1805 passes. Departmental reports. Since we have him here, let's keep Aaron going.
First, I wanted to, I think you all know Andrew already, but I wanted to introduce Andrew.
Andrew got to sit through this whole meeting today. He's thinking, can't I get back over to work?
I wanted to put a face to the name and also introduce Andrew how the board meetings operate. So Andrew's been doing a great job. He's been on board for a couple weeks now, but he was a current employee, was our mechanic in the past, so he knows the procedure, so he's able to get up and running real quick, and he's been doing a great job. Let me start out with the maintenance work updates. We did our annual pavement markings in June. We pretty much do all the center line painting every year and the edge line every 2 to 3 years. So that's completed by contract, and then we also contracted some bridge repairs by Denco. Down here, E63 is coming up for an overlay project for us in the next couple of years, so we review it for culvert deficiencies before we do that, and we found a number of them on that road. It's a little tough to see there, but some of these box culverts, the floor was deteriorated severely, and they grouted the floors for us to buy a bunch of time on those. This is a pretty good-sized box culvert that was extended with the CMP. It's hard to see the box in there, but they put an entire new floor with slurry through there, which will buy a bunch of time with that as well. Some other work they did for us. This is back to that Riverside Skunk River Bridge north of Ames. This is that emergency repair we did. It actually settled a little bit. We expected that to happen when we do a repair, especially in the dead of winter when we did this one. And so they came in and grouted where it had settled to fill that gap with some exposed piling. While I have that picture up on it, that's another thing we recently completed. Debris piled up again on that pier. It wasn't this severe. This is what happened before that collapse. We had another pileup, but now that we have that build out of riprap, we can get out there closer with our equipment and get that tore out. And we did that last month. I also want to point out, this was one of those mats that failed. We went out and checked the other bridges we knew had a similar type mat, and one of them, a Ticker IS-27, felt hollow underneath. So we also contracted Denco to come in. They pumped grout down in under that mat, and I don't really want to
tell you even how many cubic yards is going in there. There wasn't a definite void under that, so we got that addressed, thankfully.
But you've taken care of it now before it does what happened on the other side.
That's the issue with these mats. That void is covered. You don't know it's there
until it collapses.
And we also discovered just upstream it had a pretty deep void, so we were able... We have a rubber tire excavator, so it's hard for us to get off the road most of the time, but he was able to build himself a ramp to get down here, which was real helpful. And you can see we're just loading some riprap to dump in this. That was 10 foot deep, and it was starting to undercut our pier foundation. But got that taken care of at the same time, so that's an important bridge for us. Manat is doing a couple maintenance projects for us right now. This is out by... the intersection of D.W. Carver and Cameron School. We did a, it's not an official turn lane, but we paved the shoulder here. It gets cut out by traffic on the gravel portion, and it creates some pretty nasty potholes that in a week they'll come right back. So the maintenance issue for us. So that was completed this past week. But the issue is when cars turn north, they seem to sit here for a while because this gets more traffic. So the turning traffic can't get around, so they use that gravel shoulder. So that'll help with some traffic movements there.
Aaron, before you move on, so I mentioned we had Freebrick in a week or 2 weeks ago, maybe 3 weeks ago, and we agreed to with Ange to reopen the urban fringe plan in this area. Freebrick is talking close, so clearly we've got development going on the north northeast corner. Now we're starting the conversations about development going on the southwest corner. Mr. Borgmeyer, who owns the Borgmeyer Farm, you have to believe that eventually development's going to come over there. I saw the other day that they've already poured part of the road that I think is going to ultimately end up being Stang Road coming out of Ames where it comes into Cameron School Road. It is time for us in Ames to have a full conversation of what we're doing with that intersection. I happen to be one who believes that we need to have a full conversation about the first roundabout in the county at this intersection. Maybe that's the right solution, maybe it's not. But it doesn't negate that we've got to have a conversation about what we're going to do with this intersection.
I know. I was on Mankato, and just a sidebar, this past weekend, and I tell you what, you get into Minnesota and Wisconsin, you see many more. And the thing is, you know, the scary part for me while talking to my 17-year-old son is that you're dependent on everybody else here doing the right thing. So pay attention.
Yeah, but the reality that we know about roundabouts is when you have an accident on the roundabout, it is generally a side swipe, and it's not a head-on or a T-bone. It slows that. I mean, so everything that we know about roundabouts, we know that people hate them. At least they hate them initially when they come on. But we know that they slow down traffic, but yet speed up total time of moving traffic through. We know that accidents that occur in roundabouts are less severe than accidents that occur in non-roundabouts. And again, maybe it's a terrible solution for this corner. I actually wish we would have had it back when we still had full access to the north part of the intersection. Right now we just have major access to the south part of the intersection, but we're making a mistake if we don't go to Ames and start to talk through what this intersection is going to look like.
I agree.
Forrest, I can't believe you're not going to say anything here.
Did you want to get clutched by Ted? My chest, my husband happens to be out there, and he looked and smiled. I navigate them when we go back to Green Bay to see family, okay? And I hold my breath through them. So I will learn to hold my breath since I do drive this road, since I live up close to there. But yeah, there are many arguments for them, and change is good.
So I'm going to have completed the turn lane, and on Thursday they're going to jump over to North Dakota. We have one stretch of that we have not overlaid yet. We're doing that in phases, and it's the last phase.
So this is the furthest north portion?
It's actually in the middle through the curves.
Okay.
So it's a little difficult on traffic way to do, but they'll have one lane Thursday and Friday, and we're going to do a little shoulder work while we're there.
You've done a great job with North Dakota. That is such a tough road, and we were looking for a better solution than we got. But I drive that road reasonably regularly. It is much safer through there now than it was a few years ago, and that's a credit to you and the work you've done. How creative you've been.
While we're in the country club area out here, I wanted to point out a drainage issue. With the developments going in here, this pond was expanded. These are the brand new 2017 photos, so this pond didn't used to be that big. It's expanded a little bit, and they did some ditch work, and it created, I don't know what changed. We're trying to figure out what changed, right. But we now have water sitting in the ditch here. It's not real severe, but the country club would like it resolved as well.
Well, that pond is much higher than it was built to be. Now, it's holding much more water than it was intended to hold.
It is. We've been exploring. There's a tile that used to cross the road, and the tile wraps all the way up into here, and then it gets into some CRP ground where it's kind of junk. It does not drain, and it's private property, so it's not a district tile. It's in the drainage district, but it's not district tile. So we can't force the property owner. We understand this property just changed hands, so we told the country club they might want to talk to them about improving that tile. But we just realized, too, we did some checking of the tile that hits to this property and improved a little bit of it, but we failed to realize the district boundary is right here. This water cannot flow and cross a district boundary.
Even though it has been for years and years and years.
We're not sure. We don't know if there was an intake. Our plans from 50 years ago show this intake was removed, and I think that's why. But we don't know where that water went before this construction started either. We're struggling with it. But I have not told them yet. We just recently discovered this. We're not able to cross this boundary, so they're going to have to probably find another direction to take that water. And I don't know where the water is currently going when it gets high, if it's overflowing up in this way. I just want to make you aware of it. We're working with them, but...
Well, I think it goes into the road ditch. When it gets high enough, it goes straight out to the ditch, but now it's just sitting in the ditch and it didn't use it.
They just put a pipe up in the intersection, so if it gets high enough, it will cross and go down that way. It will never overtop the road. But we have been focusing on this tile, but we can't do that any longer because it's not legal. So we'll make them aware of that, but I'm not sure how we're going to resolve this issue ongoing. Moving on, talk about Skunk River Bridge debris. Been doing a lot of ditch cleaning. Andrew's been getting a lot of the work orders taken care of to the point we're almost caught up with ditch cleaning where we can look at some new regrades on some gravel roads, which is needed in some areas. So,
this rare weather has got to have helped that.
Yeah. We've been dealing with flooding so much the past 5 years, but we haven't been able to catch up on the ditch cleaning, so this year is a good year to get caught up on that. A month or two ago, we did a windstorm come through. We had five or six roads that were closed due to big trees falling. There's one in the background across the road as well. Those are things we deal with every once in a while. Ditch cleaning in general. This is over on West 190th. This property owner has had some issues, concerns with the country safe water coming down and washing through here. We were able to clean this for them because it was overtopping and getting into some of their trees. So cleaning the outlet of this pipe really helped get that water out there sooner. But we're still not completely convinced there's more water coming than what used to come down here. But this will help their concerns anyway. And Marty, I wanted to bring this one up again. This is 570th. I know you're really familiar. I brought this to the board. There was a request to clean this ditch down to this bridge, and I originally told you there's a crossroad pipe up here. We would clean to that, and that's a picture of the crossroad pipe is here, and this is where the water sits in that D5.
Yeah.
We did a survey out there after I told you we'd clean that ditch down to here, and this pipe actually slopes a great deal to the east. So water will not cross through this pipe, but it's made to go the other direction. We didn't realize that before we surveyed it. So that's why you see water sitting on this side of the pipe. So I don't think cleaning this ditch is going to do any good to have water sit here. So I think we're just going to put this on hold for a while until we figure out what the district's going to do with how they're going to route all this water. I can't figure out why this bridge is even down here. Water used to come through here because it sits dry all the time.
We have, as with the marsh, by putting new pipe north-south into that Y pipe, has mitigated some of this. And So we have done what we could do as a property owner to help make this less than this, but I suspect there's more to be done, and that will be a substantial project for everybody. Yeah, I know.
I at least want to let you know we're putting this on hold. If you have other ideas, we've talked about it. But
once again, I kind of turn to the people there because their story is a compelling one in the sense that water is flowing in a manner that it previously did not, and we're trying to address that which is versus that which was. Because once again, I mean, just what you said about a tube underneath the road was not what you would have expected to have found. And that kind of skews the argument, clearly, in my mind, a little bit more to the fact that, okay, maybe we aren't dealing with things that we understand why they are today.
Doing a lot of mowing right now. I wanted to bring up there's a July 15th date, but we're not supposed to mow before. We were mowing in early June on the pavements for safety reasons. We even got into some gravels, and this year we received more complaints on not mowing than we did for actually mowing, but we did receive a couple complaints on mowing before the July 15th day, so I want to make you aware of that. One was back on this dead end. It's near the interstate. This is the dead end right here, and this is a private lot. You see the 911 sign reflecting there. Our motor grader turned around this driveway, and so did our mower, and he cut these shoulders and really upset the property owner back here. There was just a little swath taken right here, and apparently there was some flowers planted our mower didn't see. But we've addressed this with her. We're not going to mow it. It's a dead end. We don't need to mow it, so we'll take care of this one that way. But we had another complaint from a farmer just in general that we're taking the pheasant habitat, which I think was the purpose of the whole law.
Right.
So we got to weigh the whole safety issue, whether we hit the gravels. We're talking to Joe about this a lot too, Joe Quaker and IRVM, whether we make up a map of the problem areas and try to just address those, but that means we're kind of deadheading a lot with our mower driving and not mowing while we're doing it, so whether that makes sense or not, or we just mow the shoulders of the gravels before the July 15th date. And we don't mow a really wide swath, so I don't see us taking a whole lot of pheasant habitat out. And there's some adjacent counties like Boone, they mow the entire right of way on their pavements. We don't do that, so we're leaving a lot there, but we are getting out there before the July 15th date. And
Aaron, is there any evidence after we do mow if we have in fact disturbed a wildlife habitat area? I mean, can the person on the mower tell that we went over a nest or have disturbed it?
Probably not. And the other issues here is we do get a lot of assistance with farmers. That we mowed this swath here, but the farmer came out and did almost the rest of the entire ditch. Mm-hmm. And he did the whole area out there, so it's not just the county doing mowing either that people see. So I don't know if they want to pass an ordinance that restricts farmers from mowing because they do a lot of help for us. You know.
Sure.
First into a nest or the fence line and further into fields and the waterways and whatnot. The ditch itself, now, what you do when you see the farmers with their bat wings or their disc mowers, they're just knocking it back because what you see in the evenings is they're approached by animals as they cross the road. And you're trying to, if you see them coming, you have opportunity to act accordingly, slow down or avoid them. And if they get right to the road because of any shrubbery or whatnot, that's when you have a vehicle animal incident.
So education in the future may be the way to try and balance this out. Yeah. Okay.
The ditches aren't really where they have the animals populate much. It's a transit point, just like the road is to us.
Okay.
Gravel roads are in fairly good condition, but to point out, these really dry weather conditions can cause extra washboarding and dust, of course. We're really dusty out there right now. I just threw this picture in there. We dealt with a bunch of suck holes in the sides of our pavements this spring. We're still dealing with, that's a wood culvert. You wouldn't think we got stuff like that left over, but we do. That's made out of wood tied together. So we got that replaced. Contract rock hauling was completed in early June, and that was up in the north central part of Story County. That was through Mark Marietta. We had 40,000 tons in the Boone pit, which is about right here. We hauled half of that to this area of the county with our own crews. The other half needs to be moved in order for Stratford gravel to produce more, so they're actually hauling that and weighing it and hauling it to other counties, and they're going to replace it when they produce more. So, but we still have about 10,000 pile left there. So we switched, as soon as the fiscal year was up, we switched back to rock to start spending the next year's monies. We left a few segments up here that are more heavily traveled that we prefer rock on. We've completed those and moved on to our rock hauling south of Ames. This is internal. We're doing this with our own crews, and we'll see how far we can get and how much money we can spend without trying to reduce that contract hauling in the spring.
When, and one of the main reasons we're buying the bigger truck with the pups now, so that we can do more of this. Moving on to construction projects, we had 7 projects this summer. The only one that's started is 600th Avenue. E18 up here is the first one on the list. That we didn't get an ass on that. We actually had a different contractor, Heartland, which is rare. Kind of had something to do with the DBE goal they have to meet for a disadvantaged business enterprise at a certain percentage of the contract. And I guess Manasseh had a harder time finding that person to do. It's hard to find a DBE for a quick overlay project, so it's a shoulder work that's done by a DBE. They think that's what caused that to happen. But so Manasseh got this job up here, and Heartland is doing this one. I think both those will probably happen the next month. Grant Avenue actually started this morning. We did not realize that till this morning. The same contractor that's doing the grading on the 600th jumped up there without telling us. The reason for that is there's the late start date that we have in the contract. That was a couple weeks ago, so we're charging working days already. When we get to that point, the contractor is really anxious to get there, and we ask for a week or so notice, and they just don't give it to us, and we can't say you can't work because we're charging them days. What their goal was to start tearing out fence and doing some minor grading, and they have some dirt to waste. They want to haul it in there. They were trying to do it under open traffic this morning, and it just got way too dusty. It became dangerous, so we are closing that road down today. Unfortunately, they are going to move back out. We don't prefer that to happen, but because they got to come back to 600 when it's finished and do the finish grading, which will take another week. So they are going to move out of that. So, but we didn't have a choice but to close it today.
So does it reopen while they're not there, or we're going to have a closed road? Or
we're going
to
have to reopen it.
Okay.
Which is preferred, but we don't like closing it and open it back up.
And do we have a feel when they'll be back out?
It should be shortly after, as soon as they get 600 done. They expect it to just take a week to complete after the paving's done.
Darren, where are we redirecting traffic?
Well, it's just the gravel road. It's paved all the way around, so the traffic.
Do you go to George Washington Barber, or do you go to 69?
And that's what I was asking. Are we actually
generally don't put detours up for gravel roads?
Okay.
I think people will know where to go.
Yeah, okay. The problem we're going to have here is, I would say it's likely that this is not going to be completed by the time school starts. Is that fair? Or do you think they're going to get it done by the time school starts?
No. I don't think there's a chance.
There you go. So that's going to be the real issue there.
Okay. A couple of quick issues on grants I wanted to point out. One, we have one easement left. We've been negotiating this easement for over a year. I've never negotiated an easement for this long. The property owner was not opposed to the bike path, but he had some other land issues adjacent to it that kind of drug us into, and it just drug it way out. We finally got that resolved, and it's actually on your board agenda today to approve the temporary easement. So we got that. Ethan was a big help in getting that accomplished. We had to meet with their attorneys multiple times. The other issue is ITC has the big power pole here, one of those large metal transmission poles. We actually have to bend the bike path around that in one spot. And ITC had a concern. We actually bought an easement over the top of their existing easement. So they wanted to just have some agreement in place, so they're more comfortable with that. And Ethan's reviewed that, and they have come to agreement on that. That'll be on the board meeting next week to approve that agreement to get that taken care of. So that will wrap up all right-of-way negotiations finally on this road.
Good.
So that's a big relief. 600th Avenue has started yesterday. It started out great.
Okay.
We got just short of Nancy Miller's house and their portable plant that they have over in Ames. It's run by a generator, and the generator broke down. So that stopped progress yesterday, which wasn't a big deal because it'll take 2 days to pave it anyway. The issue is that it rained this morning. So the third day they're planning on doing the intersection stuff down here, it's all handwork. So they're doing that today. Tomorrow they'll hopefully finish the main line, but I just rechecked the forecast and talking rain in the morning again. That makes a little progress, but if it doesn't rain, we'll get more than likely that all the paving completed tomorrow afternoon. But we are able to use batch trucks. We're able to be benefit by the I-35 work that's going on. One, we normally would use the ready mix trucks, which is a much slower process. Because they have a portable plant, we can use these batch trucks, and they have 20 of them lined up ready to go, so it's a very fast process. We're also benefiting with a much greater mix. We're using an interstate mix that they didn't want to switch all their processes at the plant, so we're getting much better aggregate, and we're going to end up with a better product because of that. Sure. So,
good for us. Lots of trucks on that road.
The other bridge projects, these two we had a pre-construction meeting on last week. They ought to start here, they said, within the next month. And then when they complete those two, they're going to move over to that West 190th bridge. So those will all start here in the next month or two.
So we got to have the conversation of the big bridge on 190th.
Yeah. We'll have that in the next couple of months here.
Okay.
Whether we're going to close it or not.
Okay.
Permanently. And then let's move on to construction project design. I wanted to point out an issue on the Sandhill Trail bridge design. This is the one we contracted the bridge design out because we knew there was going to be hydraulic issues, and it turned out to even be more complicated than we thought. This dash line is because it's in a detailed study area, and Story County does not allow any additional backwater in those areas. The issue we're running into with this one, usually we're working with a bridge that was originally smaller and we're making it wider, and we can't back up any more backwater. This one's almost the exact opposite. Because this bridge was so small underneath, it's shooting out some really high velocities on the outlet side here, and that actually drops the profile when it's coming out so fast out of the outlet side. So if we put a bigger bridge and make the flows better, it actually raises the water on the outlet side. We've never run into this before, which raises the floodplain elevation, which is restricted, so we cannot do that. We met with them last week to discuss the options that they had some bridge designs where the water would actually hit the beams to slow it down, and I did not like that at all. It just doesn't make any sense to me. They're trying to speed the water up. Our goal is usually to slow it down, because we're going to get more erosion on the outlet side if we have faster water. They're going to meet with the DNR next week and try to see if they have control over the floodplain regulations. They're going to try to come up with a solution, because it doesn't make sense to create a situation where we have higher velocities on the outlet, just to meet a goal.
Leanne, any creative thoughts on this?
Yes.
So Leanne is our floodplain expert in all things flood related, floodplain management related. Big fan of rules, but I like rules that make sense, and this one doesn't sound like it makes any sense.
One of the options, I don't know if you know much about this, but we're talking about purchasing a little bit more right away to keep the rise within county owned property, if the DNR would be okay with that.
And I think that might be a an option that would have a lot of value to consider, but it would take a variance from the DNR, but also the Story County Board of Adjustment, because as Darren said, it's Story County's restrictions that are causing the nightmare. So
you haven't at this point approached the landowner about this contingency? This is just conceptual right now?
We have not yet.
Okay.
A variance route, though, would require concurrence of both the DNR and Story County Board of Adjustment. And if the DNR says, no, we're not going to grant the variance, it's irrelevant to take it to the Board of Adjustment. So we've kind of very conceptually discussed, is it time to revisit that no-rise requirement we've had in the book since 1983, given the fact that...
So if we didn't have that requirement, how would that impact DNR?
Well, this is a detailed study, so we'd still have the issue.
We still have the issue, but it would be...
Well, they still allow, they allow 1 foot.
I think they allow an extra foot, which...
Yeah.
We don't.
We don't.
We don't. And that extra foot makes a big difference. Yeah. It would eliminate this problem.
So I'd like us to have that conversation, and I don't know who I'm addressing this to. I'd like us to have that conversation. So that's an ordinance that we have that was passed in 1983 by Story County. I think it's time for this board to review that ordinance, understand why it was put in, what's its intent, and is there a different way? So can I request two of you work on that and bring it to the board?
It's
board, you okay with that?
I am okay with that.
Yeah, that's our work program for later this fall to tie it to the new maps that come out. But
with this bridge, this may push up. This gives us real impetus to go ahead and work on it.
We may get delayed anyway. Just trying to work through the permitting on this. It might delay the letting a year, but we're going to still try to shoot for a spring letting on this. But point eight, we're working on it. And
okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Lee. Okay.
Still working on the university paving plans, and we were able to expedite some of the right-of-way purchases on the west side to get those power poles and easement to move it, so we don't have to move those twice. And we're working on some additional projects in FY18. End of FY17 budget update. One point out, we did end up $2.4 million under budget, and there was just two reasons for that. One is the Grand Avenue paving got carried over into next year, and that's $1.8 million. And then $365 for the shop is going to get carried over as well, so that's pretty much the extent.
Yeah, like a 91% ending fund balance.
Yeah.
Pretty impressive.
Pretty awesome.
Good.
And then that we were trying to bring down our carryover balance by spending, we saved some money through salt sand, and the late winter is spent on this $223,000 tandem truck. They were able to meet the goal of getting here by July 1st, but they didn't meet the goal of our last claims cutoff period, so it fell in that window. So we'll have to amend. We got to amend anyway for Grand Avenue paving. So
and we knew we were going to have to amend.
Yeah. So here's the truck. We do have it on site. We don't have the cheater axles in here. We've got the underbody plow because we're done buying those truck and pup combinations. We've got the three was our goal, and we've got those. So now we're going back to our regular trucks. Okay. That's the truck and pup in the past. The point out real quick, our HVAC units and the engineer's office are having some issues all year. We've had Kyle look at them, and I brought out a contractor look at them. We have actually three units in the office, which I don't know if it would take three to heat and cool that, but that's what we're putting in originally. So they're all having issues at the same time. So. Talking with Cal, trying to figure out if we can do them in stages to try to reduce the annual cost, but we could be looking at a $25,000 cost that wasn't budgeted.
When was that building built?
It's about 20 years old now.
Okay.
The new shed construction, actually had a meeting with our architect, Hala, yesterday up the rolling shed to kind of kick off the plans for that. Don't think we'll have too many issues up and rolling. They don't think there's any setbacks to meet there. They talked with the city, but we, Kelly Shed will require the conditional use permit. But the first step is to talk to Kelly about possibly connecting on their sanitary sewer so we can avoid that issue. And then even the option of them annexing the property is an issue, because then we run into an issue where we need a 50-foot rear setback to meet the county's requirements. We've talked to Jerry about that and the possibility of maybe some alternate compliance issue to relax the rules on the 50-foot rear setback. We weren't planning for that. We were planning for the front setback, but the rear setback we weren't really planning for. So we're working through those. The IDOT projects, not much to update. Those continuing on. Lots of extra traffic, like I told you we would have through this Junk River area in 265th. DOT's put dust control down multiple times now to try to address the dust concerns, and we're keeping up with it, and complaints have dropped off recently, so that's good. That, still working on that flyover bridge over 30, and that all that work's taken this dead end county road here, so that road's also getting hit very hard, and, but we're keeping up with them. Road maintenance agreements, just a quick update. Ames, we sent them a draft 2080 agreement. Still waiting to hear back from them on that. I'd like to have those in place by winter time. 500th Avenue paving by Trinitas and the DD4 issues that kind of went away. That got dropped. A bit unfortunate for us because they were going to replace this bridge for us. I was looking forward to that, but that might go away now. So we don't need to discuss that. And then we've already discussed West 190th stop signs and the Boone County stop signs. That brings us to the 566th Avenue maintenance concerns. Deb brought this up to me a few weeks back. What happened was our motor grader operator was traveling on Lincoln Highway, which is the route we use to take to get back to this gravel road right here. And right about in here, there's a one vertical curve that has a no passing zone, and while he was going over that, a car tried to pass him blindly, it sounds like, and there was a car coming over the hill the other direction. That concerned him. I think mentioned something to Loris even about he thought it was a severe problem. I will say we've been taking this Lincoln Highway route for 50 years, so it's not something new. I had talked to the operator about it, and one thing we came up with, we have a paved shoulder out there 5 feet. He's not using that or the 3 foot granule outside of that. His concern was if he moves over when he's going over that hill, it encourages people to pass. I kind of see that point.
Yep.
But on the rest of the flat open stretches, I think it's beneficial he moves over so people can see around without having to get off into the opposing traffic. So that doesn't resolve the issue of the hill. He may stay over on the hill just so he doesn't encourage passing. The other issue with this situation is we have the private lane here. He turns around right here and comes back up to get out. This private road was put in around 10 years ago. And we used to travel through there, and the church requested we didn't do that anymore since it's private property. I did chat with the church last week, and they had the same comments. Yeah, they prefer we not travel that unless we maintain this stretch of road. Not something we really want to maintain because it's both curves the whole way and it's a steep grade. It's a difficult road to maintain anyway.
Okay.
And my bigger concern is then we got to travel all the way through their parking lot with heavy equipment. And then we get over here and we've got two private sections of pavement and the asphalt stretch here is already breaking up.
Right.
I really don't want to be responsible for breaking up that pavement anymore with heavy equipment. That's the church's concern too as well. But I don't know if the board, I told him we were going to have this discussion. I may be back out to talk to him again, whether the board wants to explore maintenance options on that private road. I hate to go that route because I get requests constantly from our private subdivisions to maintain the roads, even at a cost, and we try to avoid that because our equipment is hard to get around in some of those areas. That would be really the only option. And my other concern is then we still have the issue of crossing one of the most dangerous intersections in the county. A lot of crashes there, and I don't really like him going across there with the motor grader. To me, it's just not quite wide enough.
Well, so while we're looking,
I was going to say, thank you for looking into it. I know they were telling a new person, okay, and following up on it. And I have no interest in maintaining or whatever. I brought it solely as a safety concern, and it sounds like you have discussed that with him about at least a shorter area where he might be able to pull over. So thank you very much.
And as far as somebody passing him on that hill right there, there's not a lot we can do to fix stupid. I mean, if somebody's just that dumb that they're going to do that, and you hate the thought of
putting our people and anybody else in danger, but somebody's going to make a dumb decision like that's going to make a dumb decision.
And we do have another operator close to that area if we want to switch operators. If that one operator has a real concern there, we could switch operators too. Other than that, I don't have a lot of good solutions.
There's not a better route than going on Lincoln Highway. We've been doing it for the last 50 years along Lincoln Highway. Our motor graders are not the only vehicles moving up and down Lincoln Highway that move at a slower pace, and it's going to get worse, not better, as the pond comes online. The reality of that stretch of road are that it's doing exactly what it's supposed to do. Marty, you used to drive that road every single day.
You have churches that displaced from Campus Town to the highway. Barillo was just coming out of the ground. It was a chop site trailer 20 years ago. Now they're going to add on. And Ames annexed farm ground for the purpose of it not being farm ground and industrialized. Lincoln Highway or Old 30 in East Orange County Parlance is a road that is over trafficked. And to see 600 get paved to what I suspect will be a highly used road. I mean, and then what's lurking in the background is what the DOT does with New 30 anyway, which will come to us in some shape or form.
Yep.
Yeah, and the thing is, clearly that is one of those things that you do what you can. I've always had good success navigating around the county equipment. They're very mindful of you approaching or you being behind them, and I'd have to say I wish that all the other traffic that I met was as competent as our county crews.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Well, I'll echo what Laura said. Thank you for digging into it. It looks to me like we're doing the best we can do.
And we just don't know what DOT is going to do with their interchange. Church mentioned that. They don't know what their future access is even going to be to get out of it.
This entire area is going to change over the next 10 years, and we need to be prepared to change with it.
I just want to touch on the federal aid swap real quickly. We've been working with the DOT on making the rules for that. The law was passed that we can do the swap, but now we got to make the rules. The one bit disappointing thing for me is we talked about using that local dollars to pave 560th south of Huxley. The DOT had headed down a path that were requiring it to be at least a farm market road. So I was disappointed to hear that. One point out, there's going to be a joint meeting at ISAC that's August to discuss this a little bit more in detail. But
yeah, that's all about that. The engineer will be in that joint meeting. That's going to be beneficial if you guys can make it.
Drainage district issues. We did get the one wrapped up south of Colo. It was a large, about 200 feet of a large tile that needed to be replaced. We were able to use the assistance of a contract that was in the area to do a road crossing. They helped us complete this at pretty low cost, so we got that one wrapped up. The Fernald, it's just south of Fernald. This is a railroad crossing issue we're dealing with. This crossing is blocked by tree roots, so there's been a large hole in the field out here for quite a while. So you picture that hole. Until we're able to jet back through the railroad, this is the trees that are causing the tile to get plugged. We have got the permit fee sent to the railroad, and that generated actually another permit to actually talk with them, so we're working through those permits. This is all a whole new process the railroad has to work with them, but it's taking way too long. But we're getting somewhere, and while we're in Fernald, with how Jerry's been working with the town on looking at some of their drainage issues, we know the town has a lot of drainage issues because it all uses the district tile for its storm sewer. Some water sits, you can see some darker areas back in this area. So we're going to talk to the railroad while we have their attention on if there's anything they can do to do any grading back here to help that. The other issue, landowners could tile over to the district tile, but that's a private expense. Because it wouldn't be district tile, they'd have to use private funds to drain into the district tile. That could help some of this, but it still won't drain very fast. If you get a 4-inch rain, it's still going to take days to drain, even if they do put those connections. The one issue that I've talked about in the past is that John Hunter property, this is still a county road right-of-way, and water does sit right here, and that was recently brought into the district through annexation, so we could drain that now over to here, but that would be at a county expense. Mm-hmm. Or we could actually vacate this road and it would no longer be a county expense because there really is no reason to have this road anymore. It used to be a loop here. It used to be a lot of government grain bins back here.
Right, but so what I don't want to do, so I happen to be in favor of vacating the road right away right there. There's no reason for us to have it. But I really hate the idea of vacating it to those landowners on both the north and the south and saying, oh, by the way, now it's your problem. So I'd really like to see the county look at what we can do to fix the situation and then vacate it. And then it becomes those private landowners' issues, but we've at least handed it to them in reasonable shape. Board, we'd have to discuss that. Darren, you'd have to come back. I'll just say this about Fernald. Fernald and Shipley, really, but Fernald is the one fairly major area in the county that's completely our responsibility in terms of residents, right? They don't have their own city government. They don't, and it was Paul Toot's mission to make sure that the county didn't lose sight of Fernald, and I think we owe it to the people of Fernald that we don't lose sight of it. Jerry and I have talked about that a little bit, and he and his staff are doing a great job. Darren, I've appreciated you digging in. But the reality is, you know what, we've got to step in. From my view, we've got to step in and serve more as a municipality would for these people, and we haven't. And here, let them.
We do have an issue with the big tree right here blocking the tile, and we need to hire a contractor to put solid tile through there. We've had those discussions in the past. I would like to combine that with this at the same time so we can start working on estimates for both of these together and bring it to the board and see what that's going to cost. But because of the utility issues here, this one's going to be fairly costly. We'll start working on this. We bought some time by jetting this clear. That buys us usually 2 years at least. We just did that about a year ago. So we've got some time, but opportunity to work on that. On the test base on DD20, there's a picture the last time I was out there. They still didn't have the drop structures on the other side of the railroad put in, but I think they do have that in now. Just a picture. This is the one they jacked through the railroad. That's a very large metal culvert, and it was working good when I was out there. That I saw was looking good.
All but one of the tiles coming from the north were really flowing well last time I was out there, too.
Oh, and just real quick on this is in a drainage district. This is 580th north of the Holubs area out there. That new box culvert we put in had some complaints about the amount of spilt coming off the property. I did write a letter to the landowner out here. We've seeded this probably 5 times. Every time we seed it, it gets a new layer of spilt over the seed. The property on this side has requested that we do something about the silt. It is private property, so there isn't a lot of teeth I have to do anything with it other than request. It used to be more of a grass waterway. Oh, shoot, I think I lost my power. That was about it for my slide, but if you saw that, there used to be more of a grass waterway, and there's also a dark spot you can see on the 2017 photos that appears to be a hole in a tile. The property on the other side, it's pretty sure it's a private tile, but it's sucking silt in the district tile, which is our concern. So I'm trying to put some pressure on him to see what he has planned to fix that. I have not got a response. I sent that a couple weeks ago.
So I've got a call into the landowner and have not connected with him yet. But this is a conversation, Marty. I mean, you were out there yesterday. I'm going out there Friday.
There's a private tile that does run underneath that, what we call a waterway now. That is, has had a lot of private dollars trying to maintain it, but now we're in a situation where the fact that what would have been previous subsoil water piping is now over the top, and it's affecting 2 farms to the east, and things need to change, and the picture tells the story. So, good luck on this one, but I think we got a little bit of follow-up. Just had a long conversation yesterday, I believe.
It's amazing they denied on your last point.
Yeah, what happened?
Lastly, I want to point out 3 new hires. Christina Jennings, our new administrative assistant 2, started yesterday. So she got started. We're hiring 2 new equipment operator ones due to retirements, and they will be starting in a week. Alex Gully, he is from the Maxwell area, and then Robert Morgan from the Story City area. And then that will leave a mechanic position open from Andrews that he left vacant. We didn't have any interest in that internally, so we're going to have to advertise that externally. We'll open that soon. And the last thing I want to mention was the pipeline. We did have an open meetings records request on our pipeline records, and those are pretty much exclusively held at this point by ISG. And apparently they've had this request from many of the other counties, the same request, that they've already been working on that. I think Deb's working on that to get that request to ISG, given what they need. But while I was talking to ISG, I got an update on when they thought they'd be turning those over to the county, and he thought it would be not until next spring. The restoration work they're still working on, he thought it would go into winter, and then they need to wrap up the records and then turn them over to us. So it's going to be a while before they're in our hands in case we get another public records request.
Yeah, so I would just ask that we keep Ethan and Jessica in the loop on this and make sure that we're following through on everything that we need to be following through on.
Right. So, Darren, is ISG saying that they are not even making the Iowa law right now?
No, I think they are. It's just that the amount of stuff they're requesting was time-consuming, and they were starting to put it together. But I think as long as you tell them the time frame they're going to get it back to them in, they're working on it. But, I don't know that that might be able to address it. I don't know if we've given them the official request to go ahead yet on it or not. But,
All right. Thank you.
Questions, Darren? Darren, good job. Thank you.
Oh.
Thank you, Darren. Next, planning and development quarterly report. Good afternoon, Jerry.
Hi, Jerry.
Jerry, I don't want you to feel bad that you're clearing out the room, man.
It happens sometimes.
You're a people.
Dang, I fixed it.
Dang, is that what you said?
See what you got.
Second quarter, April through June 2017, we're going to compare this year to the last 2 years, second quarters. We're going to look at zoning permits, development applications, projects, development applications, and then status of work program. First slide is the zoning permits. We're up from the last 2 years, up by one from last year's second quarter, and up by 12 from the second from 2015 second quarter. The dwellings are in blue and the other permits are in red. Accessory structures, fences, commercial improvements, additions to homes, that kind of thing. Second quarter valuation is also up. It's nice to report when things are up. About $2.8 million from the last year's second quarter, about $3 million increase in valuation from 2015 second quarter. Again, it's a combination of the dwellings and other permits. This is a smorgasbord of items, including conditional use permits, subdivisions, rezonings, development cases, variances, annexations, total number up from the previous 2 years second quarter. Four conditional uses, three subdivisions, four site development plans, so it's a good variety of things that we've worked on. I love these maps. I call it the dot map. Love the colors. I love that it shows that we've got activity where you would expect around Ames and Nevada, but we're also showing some growth and activity beyond those areas to the north and to the south. It includes the conditional uses in purple, the zoning permit for commercial development, green, dwellings blue, other permits yellow, and then subdivisions in red. Ames Urban Fringe Plan Amendment, it's already been alluded to, the Trinitas was the proposed 850-unit multifamily development on West Ames, Lincoln Way. It was denied. It was a 3-3 vote by the City Council. Annexation was approved, the subdivision and the rezoning was denied. Reasons stated for the opposition had to do with the fact that it was not on the SkyRide. There was a concern that the proposed development, what the impact would be with the current multifamily housing projects that were underway. Those that supported the project thought that there was going to be enough difference with what Trinitas was proposing to do, and so they supported it. Auburn Trail Annexation, Hyde, Hunziker Realty Development, 60 acres. Went through the process, got away to the City Development Board. They realized that there was an issue with the resolution, so the city's attorney suggested that they start the process over. That's going to be before the City Development Board on July 12th, this week. You also talked about this morning, Kurt Friedrich, Friedrich Land Development Project. He's requested to amend the Ames River Fringe Plan. It's currently priority transitional residential, and he's proposing to change it to urban residential, which would allow him to be annexed and to develop under the city's standards. So this application will be before the Planning and Zoning Commission and then ultimately the Board of Supervisors. Projects, I'm not going to go through all of them. The Iowa Interoperable Communication System, about a 400-foot high tower. It's the statewide communications network that was federally mandated. Initially was remanded back to the applicant at the Planning and Zoning Commission's recommendation. They did come back, the applicant, with a plan that did meet the county's setback requirements, and the Board of Adjustment did approve that May 17. Manats, conditional use permit for construction and demolition material south of Highway 30, south Dayton Place. And then the Joe Manat relation, but separate from the company, obtained a conditional use permit for a temporary asphalt batch plant to the southeast on 560th Avenue. Both of those are really for the Interstate 35 project, and I just noticed this morning that the southbound lane is open to traffic, so I think it's the first day that it's being used. The, what else? The Donaldson rezoning, this is something that we just received. It's a request to rezone a 3 or 4 acre parcel from A1 to AR district. The land to the north is currently in conservation. I think there's like 20 acres. There's some interest from the conservation staff, conservation board, in acquiring some additional land there. They've had some internal discussions. There's been some discussion at the conservation board level. So, again, this is something that will go to the Planning and Zoning Commission and then on to the board. The Clem utility easement vacation, that was on the consent agenda. I'll provide a report to the board on the 25th. We had a request, went to conceptual review. We have not received the application yet from BBNC, Bart Clark. And it's proposing to acquire and rezone some land that's between 130th and 567th Avenue to use that for mini storage, proposing 2 or 3 mini storage units. So that's something that will go to Planning and Zoning Commission and Board of Supervisors. Most of you probably know that the YSS conditional use permit, which was approved by the Board of Adjustment on the 15th of March, has been challenged by an adjacent property owner. The first hearing date was the 10th. I have not heard anything. As I hear development on that, I will pass that on to the board. Complaints, fairly light. Two that we're working, one Joel Rasmussen property, Kelly's Agricultural Addition Lot 2. It's east of the Milford School, or what was the Milford School. It's currently a single-family dwelling. There's complaints there of inoperable and unlicensed vehicles. I'm still working with him. He's removed quite a few of the vehicles that we cited. Part of it, there's some difficulty because he did not grant us the authority to enter the property, so we're having to take photographs from the right-of-way. But I've got print-offs from the treasurer's office on vehicles that he has currently licensed. And so I've asked him to, he's been in a couple times, and I've asked him to come back in so we can get this squared away. Second one, Joe Steffes. It's a home business permit on 580th Avenue. There was a complaint that he had more employees than he was supposed to. In fact, he did. He's agreed to, our ordinance only allows one person outside of those that reside at the dwelling to live or to work at a home business. And he's agreed to have his staff, three employees, two of them, meet at the job sites. There was complaints about the number of vehicles that he had, that they were inoperable, and he you receive reports from the treasurer's office. He's got a lot of vehicles personally, and then there's a few for his business. He's able to demonstrate that they're all currently licensed. There's complaints about 55-gallon drums that were being stored on the western portion of the property. That isn't true. He was holding, they were actually all empty, and he was holding them for another organization that wanted to use them for garbage containers. And then the second time that I went out there, most of those were gone. And he also has livestock. He's got cattle and goats and different things. And he wanted to use them to cut off to use for feed. So there's probably 6 to 8 barrels. But he removed many tires and pallets. And he's in good standing with regard to his permit. This brings us to the work program. 2016, we've been working really hard since the work program was approved by the board. What is red is completed. Retail novelty farm is now agritourism, so we have a new ordinance for that. We have a new ordinance for special events, and we're currently working hard. We've been working on construction, demolition, landfill. There's many, many pieces to that. But the plan is, since this is a work program item, to put all the components together, to take the comprehensive plan together to the Planning and Zoning Commission and then come to the Board of Supervisors. But we've got a lease agreement that we're working on and a ordinance that addresses what property owners need to do to sort the material, keep it separate, get it to the right-of-way so that we can get reimbursed from FEMA. Those documents need to go to the Board of Supervisors, or excuse me, the County Attorney's Office for review. We've looked at the county's purchasing policy, so we have a better understanding of you know, how that process works for working with contractors, for the sorting, hauling. We envision that we're going to be working with contractors for white items, appliances, electronics. We met with the Ames Resource Recovery Administrator and the Boone County Landfill, Keith and his staff, a couple weeks ago. Very good, productive meeting. They're thrilled that we're working on this. They also gave us some tips on what we need to do to deal with hazardous materials. The Metro Waste Authority in Polk County will be assisting with collecting, and we're told that they'll come to our sites to collect the material. But we're still trying to flesh out what's going to be required. Initially, we were told from the DNR that we needed to get their approval for these sites, and then that changed. Keith has told us many, many times that it's very, very important that we understand what we need to do before we start the process, and so that it's very clear what we need to do to leave the site once we're done. So he's setting up a meeting with a representative from the DNR. We're going to try to get a better understanding of what we need to do because there's a lot of administrative rules that deal with this kind of thing. We're going to go out this week and get a better handle on these sites. Amelia did an amazing job of trying to locate sites that are away from the floodplain, away from creeks, rivers, away from natural areas. And so we think we're at a stage where we need to, you know, get a better understanding before we start, you know, actually talking, having discussions with landowners. And then we've got a meeting set up with representatives from the city of Cedar Rapids. They've experienced some flooding. We want to learn from their experiences. There's other entities that we want to talk to. And just try to figure out who they're working with, contracting-wise, what experiences, you know, did they have when they went through it. So a lot of plates spinning. The goal is to have something to the Planning and Zoning Commission Board of Supervisors in August or at the latest in September. So that's the plan. That's the goal.
Okay.
Bernal was brought up. Initially, we met with the citizens in May, environmental health, engineering staff, planning staff. There was over 30 people from that area showed up. So they're very interested in communicating with us, and we want to keep that communication alive. we learned that they had issues with road signs, issues with repairing of potholes, E911 signs missing. The overwhelming message, though, was concerns about stormwater drainage. So, initially, after that meeting, we met our three departments to try to figure out who would, which department would be best to deal with the different issues that came up. Administratively, we're taking care of what we can. Some of those things have already been addressed, and some of those are ongoing. But we came across a representative from the Iowa Department of Ag and Land Stewardship, who administers programs that deal with green infrastructure compared to, the piping. And he came out to the site with planning staff. We met with the property owners again. And he came up with some recommendations on the north end that might help with some of the adjacent farm ground and also assisting with one of the property owners. But to the south end, we met with the property owners. They showed us some photographs, shared some more information with us. And what they really had issues with are the high volume rainfalls, the 3, 4, 5 inch rainfalls, that water stands and stays there. I'm told in working with Darren that the drainage tile that we have is effective. It's old, but it works. It just takes a long time to drain it all out. So, but he suggested that the green practices that they would have or administer probably wouldn't be very effective. And so it's likely going to be something like piping. But we're still, giving it some thought. We're not going to give up on it. And we told them that we'd be back in 30 to 60 days, so we intend to do that. So
yeah, this is not something that comes naturally to the county. This is not what counties were formed to do. That's what municipalities were for, but this is the reality that we have. And frankly, we may experience this in the future with other towns that are currently incorporated that decide to unincorporate. We need to do exactly what you and your staff and others are doing. So thank you.
And then this brings us to 2017. What is red is things that we're working on, smart development practices to limit disaster impacts. We've had some discussions with the emergency management staff. We've collected some sample ordinances, but there's not a lot of real good examples out there. There's the fear of the takings of properties. If you limit, what property owners can do, But there's a state requirement for tier two, keeping track of tier two chemicals. Maybe that's a way that, when a business applies for a zoning permit, we can ask for that information and at minimum try to communicate with property owners within a certain distance. But again, we're still working on that part of it. Emily and Haley, our intern, are working on the natural resources layers. They're starting in the Ames area and the Nevada area, and then we're going to branch out from there. We've also started discussions on trying to identify where the future subdivisions would go, and then working on this transportation impact analysis. Before we take on new subdivisions, what's the impact to the existing roadway and road system? And also, on the previous slide, we are going to be looking at the Ames Urban Fringe Plan. And then looking at the north area from Ames to Gilbert, we're going to look at all the different layers. We're going to look at the Ames current land use plan, although they're planning to update that. Take a look at this engineering study that they did. We're going to look at where the development activity has been, zoning permits, residential subdivisions, where the prime farm ground is, the watersheds. We're going to put together a recommendation. We're going to sit down with city staff, Gilbert and Ames. We're going to go to Planning and Zoning Commission with a recommendation and follow up to the Board of Supervisors for some direction. That's what I have.
Outstanding. Questions for Jerry? There should be any questions because he's covered everything. But any questions?
Didn't leave anything untouched. I appreciate what his office has done on behalf of citizens when they walk in and concerns. And I can tell you, his staff did a wonderful job in Pernal 2 months ago.
You got a great staff down there. You're doing a good job. Thank you. Now we're to other reports, discussion and direction regarding requests for proposal manual and guidelines. Leanne Hart. This one's going to be really quick, right, Leanne?
This is the first introduction.
Okay, what is before you is an item that actually made its way in my work program a year or so ago. I'm bringing just for some an introduction, as I just said, to the manual. It's intended to really be used by elected officials and departments when they want to go through a request for proposal or a request for qualifications or the other options. When consulting firms are being selected or other types of services, it really starts to define a process that Surrey County could use to really go through those types of requests. And we've kind of done that informally in the past couple of years by really having me help entities that departments help out, but we still do have different approaches and RFPs. It is organized with table of contents that has several sections, the introduction, the components, what's an RFP. I noticed already I have RPF instead of RFP in a couple of cases. The beauty of acronyms, how you evaluate, how you receive proposals. I would also, again, this is just draft format for beginning of the discussions, add a new Appendix F, which would be our procurement and purchasing policies. I think it would be very valuable to include as well. So the next steps, again, first chance for the board to see it is today. Any potential revisions to forward on to me. With your direction, I'd like to distribute it to department heads and elected officials and get comments back really over the next couple of weeks and bring it back for some form of action on August 8th. Then allow August for formal printing and distribution, and then putting on the county's intranet too. And then noting that on a quarterly basis, someone likely may go and check it and make sure we're having the right forms of, for example, the procurement policy gets amended, that is amended up as well. And having a table of record changes that reflects that as well. Any questions for me?
Questions?
About the schedule. I have a question on the schedule here. So we're looking at it today. Then you're going to receive the comment feedback through 7/27, okay? But what if part of that comment or feedback comes up to something that the board needs to make a decision on? Will that be covered under the action on 8/8? In other words, what if we modify some stuff on 8/8? Okay, then we'll get it back one more time then, right? Does that happen? Okay.
Right. Yeah, so it's completely reasonable to do something like this with a quick 7-day review when we finally get to an adopted program.
Okay, super. Yeah, great. Very thorough. Very
thorough. Well, Leanne, you do...
instead of RFP?
Yeah, I love that.
So you do so many things so well, I hate to put an absolute superlative on any one thing that you do, but the reality is, putting together things like this, you do as well as anybody I've ever been around, and we're lucky to have you put this together. I would suggest that, unless there's objection from my two partners up here, that you do exactly what you propose. You get this out to elected officials and department heads for their comments, and then you get this back to us on the 8th. Hopefully we'll have a little shorter agenda on the 8th where we can really spend time and dig into this thing and try to come out with a solid manual, and then receive additional comments and make final action 7 days later. Okay? Good job. Thank you.
Thank you, man.
Public forum number two is an opportunity for members, and Brenda Brink was glad that we let her go early. I'm this is an opportunity for members of the public to comment on items not on today's agenda. The board may not take any action due to requirements of the open meetings law, but we may do so in the future. Anybody wishing to address us on any topic, now is your chance. And seeing no one jumping up immediately, we'll move on to liaison assignments. I think it's your turn to go first, Lawrence.
Oh, okay. So Monday, there was a meeting, included United Way. Deb and I were there. There was HRDA was there and Heart and Lung Senior Services. We were discussing the needs of rural families that had someone attending Heartland Daycare, the adult daycare, which is dementia focused. So there was some discussions. There was some progress made. Several people left with assignments to go. Also related to transportation, I'd like to note that I think it was last week, both Deb and I attended a new group through Progress Industries that wants to look at ideas about going for work to see how to get people to move to work. And it was a very good discussion. They are actually, this new group coalition is going to come to the Transportation Advisory Board this tomorrow, as a matter of fact, and see if actually we can get merger of the two, or at least get common ground going forward. But it's kind of exciting that we've got a lot of people focused on transportation from different ways. And so that happens tomorrow. Tonight, I'd like to let you know that the Ames Area Metropolitan Planning Organization has the fiscal year plan up for the hearing, the actual hearing. I will not be there because I actually will be at the Central Iowa Regional Housing Authority, who also has their public hearing for the their housing plan for the year. And that, because they're actually having a meeting and Vanessa's having to go back to Ames, so we're all kind of playing jump frog around here. We still have 256 Section 8 vouchers in the county, so we still are paying attention. I'm excited about tonight because we've got a complete agenda, no last-minute additions, and I think that we're going to go through very quickly. I was invited to the Amos Cohorts meeting as an observer last night, and cohorts are where the people from different churches come together, and they actually talk about Amos, kind of about all of the efforts that are going forward, and I found that very informative. It helped me learn where Amos takes the lead and then where they hand it off to someone else. So I was very appreciative of being able to do that. And basically, let's see, that's pretty much, oh, yeah, the Transportation Coalition. The website refresh tomorrow, committee is at 10 o'clock tomorrow, and I guess we're going to take a look at the draft of the survey and start talking about how we're going to solicit external input now. So it looks like things are moving forward on several other fronts.
Super, a question on the website redesign. So, yes. So my understanding, and maybe I missed this, but my understanding was now that we got to the point that the board has said, okay, we know what direction we're headed.
Right.
So I view that as the board was going to take a step back from that and let staff do their work. Is that not the way you see this happening?
Yes. What we'll do tomorrow is that in addition to looking at the survey, what will happen is that people are going to start talking about what group or groups among the three project managers, at least I hope so. We all threw ideas at Alyssa to put together an agenda. So, okay. So then that's when the teams would form or people move among the teams. Yes. So then the only thing that would be still is every once in a while we would come together, all of us, to exchange what's going on. But, yes, I would not be involved in any one of the three teams.
Okay.
Correct. That's just the next time everybody decides they need to get together to take the temperature of you know, where is everybody on their projects. That's the only time I would be involved. So they're exchanging the information.
Okay.
So we have the three team leaders. And we are looking at getting some training in, which would be handled, I think, spearheaded by Barb and Paula for the internet that's already happening. So I wouldn't be involved in that either.
Okay. Yep. Okay. Yeah, perfect. I just think it's important that we let staff do their work. Thank you. Anything
sure.
else?
No, sorry. That's it.
No, Marty?
Quickly, the 9/11 board is moving to selection of a consult. We've been moved from 5 candidates to 4. We will be doing background checks and sundry things in the background is getting us to a decision. I see that coming, working through the next month or so. Had a follow-up conversations on the AME side and body transport within the county on unattended deaths. So I think we got some resolution on some issues that were lurking in the background. Had a nice outreach from a township member in the community about the cemetery training we had, and suggest that it was that it come from that. Got to start my week in a cemetery in rural Story County yesterday morning, and I got to meet some old relatives I forgot I had that are out there. And I think it was a good thing. They would ask that we do some follow-up, because they had used the gentleman that gave this presentation as a resource, and he's been more than willing to give information back. ABC with Brenda, you heard a lot of what she said today, and I can't tell you how well received she is when you go into the small communities, because I think they see somebody that speaks their language and willingly and eagerly adopts their visions, because every community has their own path they seek to choose to what they call housing, what they call success, what they call economic development. And the thing is that she's a plug-in. It is a pleasure to watch. Farm Bureau, we're having its annual meeting here this Thursday. I think you guys all got invitations. I got asked to attend their economic summit next week at the Sheena Building, and I will be doing that. And we all have our other little things percolating under the water, not the least of which is a drainage issue lurking in Granite 5. But yeah, I almost want to smile on that one too.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, next item on the agenda, disappointingly, is possibility of the board moving into closed session. I did a little research, and as far back as I can tell, this is the first time this board has ever had to go into closed session directly because of the actions of one supervisor in disregarding legal advice that they received from the county attorney. It is unfortunate and completely unacceptable. Jessica, take us where we need to go.
Pursuant to Iowa Code Section 21.5, sub 1, sub C, the Story County Attorney respectfully requests that the Board of Supervisors vote to go into closed session to discuss strategy with counsel in matters that where litigation is imminent or its disclosure would be likely to prejudice or disadvantage the position of the governmental body.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Olson.
Aye.
Chitty.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. We'll go take a 2-minute recess, go in closed session. We will reconvene in open session once the closed session is concluded.
Hit this one, Shell. Oh, so I did. Thank you, ma'am. Let's see, is Jess coming back? We can probably do this without her. Okay, so you let me know when you're ready, Lucy, and we can go. Okay. So, board back in open session after a closed session of about an hour, I believe. No necessary action coming out of closed session. So if there's nothing else before the board today, I'd take a motion to adjourn.
I would so move.
Second. The motion is second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
And we're adjourned.